No poisonous sprays or artificial fertilizers are used on Iaga. The ground is sterilized with a deadly ray before the seeds are planted. Keep out of the way when it is working. The contrast with our primitive farming methods and these super efficient methods on Iaga is bizarre. Text.cont:// and advertising agencies, tax offices, accountants, consultants, ministries, the whole weapons industry, the army, air force, navy, administration and bookkeeping for as far as it is not connected with the registration of the direct production process, etc., etc. The universal system reaches the unlikely figure of 90%, but this has an additional reason. All creative work is not taken into account because they do not regard this as servile work. It is performed after working hours as a sort of hobby, and includes things such as planning, strategy, innovation, research, development, scientific research, or art forms and the organization of events. This occupation percentage for the industrialized Western countries lies somewhere in the region of 30-40%. 2. The production effectivity is expressed in terms of the relationship to the maximum possible at that moment. What it boils down to is that everything that can be automated is classed as 100%, and the rest is related to that. So exists a model for each system by which other systems can be judged. Think for a moment of the gigantic investment capacity of these trusts in relation to ours, for the most part, small concerns. The Iagan figure is relative, so it does not have much meaning for us, but I think it would be safe to say that our figure would be somewhere in the region of 50% lower. 3. The quality factor determines the effect of certain goods or investments on the prosperity. An object that lasts twice as long as another has twice the effect on the prosperity. All repair time, direct or indirect, lessens the effect. And beside this is the ethical reason for the quality control, the scarcity of raw materials. An object that lasts twice as long as another uses half the amount of raw materials, that is why they are so critical when it comes to the question of quality, and the trusts allow no concessions in this respect. Consumers' goods that pass the quality test, such as food, score 100%. But all the rest are meticulously checked for durability and repair demands. Durability is expressed in a percentage of the maximum attainable or desirable, and the servicing hours are deducted in percent. When it is said that their rail system has a useful life of more than 100 earth years, and that the frames of their house cylinders last for many hundreds of earth years, perhaps you will get an idea of their standards of quality. To set our quality standard again at 50% is perhaps ridiculous, but that is not really the point. The welfare efficiency is calculated by multiplying the three factors by each other, and they state that the universal economic system easily gets 70% average among numerous intelligent races. The average of our industrialized countries can perhaps reach the 7-9% figure. This shocking conclusion means that with our present technical development, the welfare profit could be 8-10 times as high as it now is. With a just and efficient system, our present number of workers could have conquered all the poverty in the world. We have a ridiculously inefficient production system caused by too many professions that consume prosperity instead of creating it. Our stupid way of sharing prosperity causes so-called overproduction and we resist automation for the sake of employment, while the majority of our world population lives in poverty. The low quality of our goods, helped by artificial aging, means that we simply throw away a large part of our welfare profit. Perhaps we can't help it because our mentality is wrong, but no matter how you try to excuse it, it remains stupid. They were dearly pleased that I was at last awake and was able to understand that efficiency and justice were not just loose, idealistic words. But, good heavens, first 100 times the population density and then times the production. How is that possible? Unbridled overpopulation and unbridled overproduction. Rubbish. We do not know what the words overpopulation and overproduction mean. When we complain about overpopulation, we mean inefficient economic structure and planning. With overproduction, we mean roughly the same, The low purchasing power of the average income through the inefficiency of our antisocial economy. As soon as we begin to distribute our products in a just manner, we will see that the problem lies in it a low productive capacity. Because, friend stuff, make no mistake as to what men will use if given the opportunity. Take, for example, the consumption capacity for a family who, because of their financial state, can have everything they want. Their level lies at least 20 times higher than the world average. Your economy will have to work very hard before you can create genuine overproduction. This shows itself in a failing interest in a larger income when it means a higher working intensity or more responsibility. The remedy is simple: everyone works shorter hours. It works both ways: shorter hours lower the income and stimulate consumption. The wish to work increases in order to increase the income, and at the same time the first steps can be taken in narrowing the wage gap by raising the minimum wage. As soon as market saturation manifests itself, the leveling of wages increases. The rich remain as rich as they were before and the poor are raised to the same level, and so, with efficiency and justice, you create a stable world. So everyone will then have the same income? Yes, exactly. The prosperity is then fairly shared by everyone. Unlimited prosperity creates complete security. You work shorter hours than we do? Yes, much shorter. Everyone has the same rights? They all earn the same, and there is no difference between a white collar and a pair of overalls? No. Everyone wears overalls from time to time. That is why we hate maintenance and repair work. Are you beginning to understand something about our quality? Yes, and that is another argument for efficiency: you get a different set of tasks for the people. Does your world president also wear overalls sometimes? Of course, since there is no upper or lower class anymore, only a difference between directive and executive work. When we talk about a short work period, we are talking about non-creative production and maintenance work, and everyone does this, even the president. Direction is purely creative work, and we do this in our free time. Am I to understand that all the top positions are a sort of hobby? We do not differentiate between high and low positions. We choose people to direct us who, outside of their slave labor, also have an interest in this activity as an expression of their creativity, like a hobby. In this stage of development, creativity is no longer considered labor, because it is the target of men. That's all well and good, and I can see that if we were to use the same system, things could be much better for us, but to induce people to change their entire way of life is not easy, not to say impossible. It requires higher education and more knowledge. It's easy for you to teach people by the use of your information radiation. Why don't you give us the knowledge to make such machines? We could then easily guide our people along the right path, and it would greatly increase the tempo of Earth's development. We tremble at the thought of giving you the secrets of immaterial radiation. It would not be long before man discovered that it could be used as a weapon, with the almost certain result of self-destruction. And even if it were not so used, who would profit from its advantages? Surely only the developed nations, because the equipment is expensive. This would mean that the white race would be in an even stronger discriminating position against the other races. A race that does not know its responsibilities cannot be helped. Moving on to the next subject, freedom, they began by showing me one of their living, or house, cylinders. The film opened on the ring road outside the building. An automatic sliding door opened and gave access to the parking space for the cars, in the basement. The cars stood in neat rows, four deep, with the front wheels in shallow grooves in the floor. The camera moved through this area and out through a door which led to the central garden of the hollow cylinder. A beautifully laid out recreation area of at least 300 yards in diameter. A quarter segment of the cylinder was glass, which, combined with a gigantic glass roof about 300 feet above the ground, gave the effect of being inside a huge glass house. Galleries ran around the inside at each floor. And on the lowest gallery, which was wider than the rest, small rail transport units moved. The central space was a huge garden of tropical-looking plants and flowers. A huge central pillar was at its base, surrounded by a rock garden with plants and flowers in the most exotic colors. Streams and waterfalls came out into ponds and tanks that contained strange and brightly colored fish. Green, moss-like areas were broken up by patches of lowers and shrubs. I saw sport fields and playgrounds with rather technical-looking apparatus, ponds in which children were paddling and a large swimming pool into which people dived from a large, slowly turning wheel construction. Most amazing was the behavior of these eagles in the water. Even small children could swim with a power and speed that was nothing short of surprising. They floated effortlessly, many swam in pairs with their arms entwined by taking turns in making a sort of scissor movement with their legs. They had immense pleasure, and demonstrated something that could be called a feeling of freedom, freedom from gravity. They sprung and dived under water for so long that it was difficult to see if they ever came up again. The real meaning of this water affinity became clear to me. These beings did not emerge from the land as we did, but from the water. They developed from amphibians. The broad webs between the widespread fingers and toes was originally a fin which enabled them to spring out of the water like dolphins. They could move in water faster and more easily than on land. Everywhere were seats, arranged in half or full circles. A magnificent meeting point for young and old, for the Eagan children did not play in the streets. Everything necessary for living was here, a complete city housed in one huge cylinder, highly efficient and superbly comfortable. Before I go on to describe their houses, I would like to say something about the general layout of these buildings. In the basement, a huge set of machinery was installed. They used the planet's internal heat as the only power supply, and this was distributed as water, under extremely high pressure and temperature. Except for this, these buildings were completely self-supporting. Even an external sewage and garbage collection did not exist. They had a fantastic recycling system. Most of the garbage was separated into its raw materials, while human excrements were used as dung for the surrounding agricultural lands, resulting in a nearly 100% circular course. The final debris was burned and ground to a fine powder. Together with waste water, this was pumped away, deep into the planet's crust. This had something to do with the prevention of heavy earthquakes by means of initiating light ones. The next floors, underground, they used for offices, workshops and production work at a full day's cycle. They worked at home. This was to prevent unnecessary transport of people to and from their work. Speaking of overpopulation and pollution, there was really something to learn for us. Something else that we could learn from was their method of food production. They only used the word overpopulation in relation to the quantity of food that is available. As long as everyone has enough to eat, the planet is not overpopulated. They are very careful to prevent food shortages, as this would disrupt their whole society. Investments in the farming areas are much greater than those even in the housing sector. Cultivation, and the associated ground, water control, the spraying, fertilizing and the agricultural machines demand gigantic earth transports and millions of kilometers of pipelines and drainage systems. And again the construction of a canal system and gigantic pump stations. Under text for drawing, huge automated cultivating machines consisted of great bridge structures with a free span of more than 100 meters. These bridges move transversely along rails which ran the full length of the fields. They work a piece of land up to 250 meters wide by 10 kilometers long and operate in rows of up to 20 machines side by side. The bridge structures carried a variety of equipment which was controlled from a central control room. Fertilizers and sprays are introduced via the central rail and administered by means of a rolling tank. At the end of the rail, the whole unit turns and returns over a parallel strip of ground. All this is a part of their attempt to accommodate the largest possible number of beings on their planet. The first requisite for this is a maximum food production. They then introduced me to one of their numerous cultivating machines which are mounted in the vast fields situated between the house cylinders. These consisted mainly out of an imposing bridge construction with a free span of more than 100 meters. These bridges moved transversely along rails which ran the full length of the fields, some 10 kilometers, in rows of 20, placed side by side. The bridges were supported about 3 meters above the ground and could carry a variety of equipment which was controlled from a central control room. One of the bridges that was working was fitted with a machine that performed many operations in one go. First, a strip of ground was cut out in two layers by two U-shaped blades, then the strip was sterilized with a deadly ray, sprayed with a muddy-looking fertilizer, turned, and returned to the furrow. Then a row of fast-moving gooseneck-type pipes planted the seeds for the next harvest, and finally, the surface was rolled flat and covered with a transparent layer. When the machine was finished, the result resembled a dance floor. They certainly were masters in automation. Beside the farming, their food production was supported to a great extent by the fisheries. Their preference for fish probably has something to do with their amphibian origin, and the fact that they have so many oceans. Their method of catching fish is, in one word, absurd. So absurd, in fact, that I thought in the beginning that they were trying to make a fool out of me. Later, I discovered that this was just a byproduct of their system of climate control. It was a gigantic water moving project whereby the warmest water in the oceans is pumped to the islands and seems to have something to do with controlling the rainfall. The system utilizes thousands of kilometers of flexible pipes running underwater, each with a text for picture/drawing. The bridge structures performed many operations simultaneously in one run. First, a strip of ground is cut out into layers by two U-shaped blades. Then the strip is sterilized with a ray, is sprayed with a muddy-looking fertilizer, turned, and returned to the furrow. Then a row of fast-moving gooseneck-type tubes plant seeds for the next harvest. Finally, the surface is rolled flat and covered with a transparent layer, leaving the field looking flat and finished as a dance floor. Diameter of more than 100 meters. The catch consists purely of fish that have been sieved out of the system. The strange thing was that these fish looked just the same as fish here on Earth. I saw some fish with a length of 4 to 5 meters which, for as far as my knowledge of biology can be trusted, were perfectly normal sharks. I also saw swordfish, and predatory fish were hunted with the aid of sound waves and flavored bait. The carcasses were thrown back into the sea. Beside this, they also eat meat, but it would be going too much into details to describe their breeding methods here. To tell the truth, I was somewhat disappointed to see that a super race still killed animals. I only relate this information on their food production in order to comply with their request to do so. They see this information as an important part of the process of identification. This process will be dealt with later. For the same reasons, I will also describe some details of their schools and the hospitals in the house cylinders. These were, together with other social services, situated on the top floor, with the glass roof serving as the ceiling. The school classrooms were square, with four walls from corner to corner, forming four triangles. Where the triangles joined in the middle were four large screens, on which the lesson was shown. The means of teaching was exactly the same as was used for me in the spaceship, a film with a simple explanation. The real information was transmitted by the radiation. In the space behind the four screens sat the teacher, who really had nothing to do with the lessons but acted more as an observer, noting the behavior of the children and advising parents on their upbringing. The lessons were the same over the whole planet, this having the advantage that should a child move to another area, which happened frequently, he could simply pick up the lessons where he left off without having to repeat or miss anything. This basic schooling continued until the child had reached the age of 15 or 16 years. When I think of the information that I gained in 2 days from the radiation, I can imagine the level these children must reach when subjected to the radiation for 10 years or more. Their basic schooling must be above the level of our universities. Having completed this basic instruction, the children moved on to the advanced schools, a normal cylinder where all the students lived together and where they could specialize in their chosen subjects. The hospital that they showed me was not the type that was situated in each of the cylinders, but airy ill hospital where special medical treatment was given. Seen from the outside, it looked like a normal house cylinder, but half was the accommodation for the personnel and the other half for the patients. I do not think it is necessary for me to describe the working of such a hospital in detail. The reader can imagine that everything was regulated with the usual Iagan efficiency, and to describe things that can only be clarified by superlatives becomes rather boring. One thing, however, does strike me as interesting. Each patient was connected to a computer that catered to the individual needs and wishes of its charge: pain alleviation, medicine, contact with friends or relatives, entertainment or information. The computer took care of it. Do people still die on your planet? Control of death demands a different medical ethic. We feel justified in prolonging the possibility of happiness, but not in extending a life that nature regards as being at an end. Going back to the houses, I noted that silent, air-operated elevators with electromagnetic stops functioned as vertical transport, while broad galleries formed the horizontal connections. From these there was a fantastic view of the central gardens. Each house had a large entrance hall which was open to the gallery, so that anyone who happened to be passing by could look into it. This would not have seemed too strange to me had it not been for the fact that on one side was a row of showers. Here my shocked confrontation with the living habits of these beings and the breathtaking freedom that typified their relations with one another began. Young and old had the strange social duty, on returning from school, work or any other activity outside the house, of washing themselves from head to toe before re-entering the living quarters. What happened then? Everyone undressed in the hall with the greatest of ease and stepped into the shower. These were tubes, about 3 feet in diameter, with a glass screen in front, and on the floor were two raised steps on which to stand. At the back of the tube was a vertical bar, to which, at ground level, a flat elliptical tube was connected. Having closed the glass screen, the occupant pressed a button and the elliptical tube immediately began spraying jets of white foam while moving upwards along the vertical bar. The occupant was transformed within a few seconds into a snowman. On reaching the top of the bar, the spray changed to clean water and came slowly back to its original position at the base of the tube. Warm air was then circulated in the tube to dry the bather, washed and dried within 3 minutes with a minimum use of water. Having dressed, one was then permitted to enter the living quarters. Dressed is perhaps the wrong word, for their house attire was nothing more than a kind of sarong that left the woman, as well as the men, naked above the waist. You must not think that this bears any comparison with humans dressed in the same manner, the only really noticeable difference between male and female Iagans being that the men are more powerfully built and more muscular than the women. Their behavior toward one another was really remarkable. I never once saw a man in the vicinity of a woman who did not put at least one arm around her. A big hug was their normal manner of greeting one another, and this also applied to the children. When the warm greetings were completed, the camera followed the party into the house. The hall came out in the corner of a large room of about 60 by 60 feet, the central living area of the house. The first thing that I noticed was a huge glass wall over the whole length of the room, which gave a magnificent view of the surroundings. I could see the imposing rail system that passed through a woodland area, and on the other side, two more of the cylinders. The floor of the room sloped down toward the windows in a series of shallow steps and stopped about 9 feet from it, where the edge was finished in a king of balustrade. The window continued down to the lower floor, where it ended in a wall about 2 feet high. The interior was luxurious, but the color combinations were rather too bright for my taste. Loose furniture was nowhere to be seen. The seating was built into the floor in the form of couches, spread with thick, comfortable cushions. The lower floor was connected to the upper by two stepless escalators, moving or stationary at the will of the user. The bedrooms were not large, but intimate and colorful. In one wall there was a large screen and another contained a shower identical to the ones in the entrance hall. The ceiling glowed with the diffused orange lighting, and strange objects decorated the walls. The next scene was fascinating, the family at table. The group of some 25 people, about half of which were children, gathered in a rather bare-looking corner of the large upper floor. One of the company operated a kind of lever and out of the floor rose a vertical wall that opened out into a table about 18 feet long and 5 feet wide. At the same time, two sliding panels in the wall opened to reveal a cupboard containing partitions and a lot of complicated equipment. In the manner of a self-service restaurant or cafeteria, each person took a tray and helped himself to various dishes, which were then warmed up for a few seconds in an oven-like apparatus. Within a few minutes, everyone was seated, cross-legged on the floor, around the table. At the head and tail ends of the table sat a man and a woman who did not eat with the rest. As soon as everyone was seated, the man at the head of the table raised his hand and said something, upon which the rest became silent. They held in one hand a gold-colored, spoon-like implement and the other hand was placed on the knee of the person next to them. The people eating remained silent and listened to what the man and woman who were not eating had to say. It was a fascinating scene of the customs of these beings from a strange, distant world. The way they made a ceremony of eating made them seem rather like mythological gods. When everyone had finished eating, they all stood up and each threw an arm around the shoulders of his neighbor, thus forming a chain around the table. They stood that way for a couple of seconds and then commenced to tear their implements from the table, and when this was finished, the table was again retracted into the floor. The spoons were placed on a machine for cleaning, the plates and trays went into a disposal unit for plastics and everyone finished by washing his hands and cleaning his teeth. Hand towels and dish towels were non-existent here. Everything was dried by warm air, and I began to wonder what the Eargon housewives had to do, especially as there seemed to be 5 or 6 women in each house. Shopping was done automatically by a computer, the order was placed in the computer and the goods were delivered sometime later in a container. Don't your women have to do housework anymore? The Eargons laughed. We have told you that we no longer have any class distinctions, and this also applies to women. Chores are shared equally by everyone. But when men are at work outside the home, the women must surely work too. That is true. If men work for 3 hours a day, women do the same, no more and no less, otherwise there is discrimination. Strange. So the women may only do housework for 3 hours per day? Your ideas are slow to change. Housework, in other words, the necessary upkeep, is done by everyone together. If the task of some women is the upbringing and teaching of the children and other social work, then they too have the same right to work outside the home as men do. What about the women who don't have any children? All Eargons have the same duty to the children in the group in which they live. The upbringing of the child to the mentally stable and developed adult that a high culture needs is a difficult and complicated task. The schools plant the knowledge by means of the radiation, but the adults must help the child to transform this knowledge into experience. The home sphere plays an important part in the development of these things. A race that seeks income leveling must give the utmost attention to raising the mental level of the people, because the raising of the general minimum wage must be in balance with this level. Value and income differences between people can be overcome only by a high minimum mental level. So those women feel happy with the task of teaching children because they are able to fulfill themselves on different levels. They choose what they do. Everyone who fulfills his or her task with interest and inventiveness feels happy. What more could one possibly expect from life than being successful in love and able to teach this to children? This love, has it got anything to do with sex? The sexual relationship between man and woman plays an indispensable but nevertheless unimportant part in our understanding of the word love. It is directed to be creative individual expression and that is a thing that must begin to be taught to children as young as possible. I don't understand that. That is logical, for we have only just begun with our explanation of the concept of freedom. Let us start at the beginning. Freedom is the absence of compulsion, and because compulsion is a form of discrimination, It follows that freedom is the absence of discrimination. A step further, freedom exists, logically, on the basis of justice and efficiency. The development of an intelligent race is governed by two dangerous natural laws, which in fact are the laws of cosmic selection. They formulate the demands for entrance to the higher regions of evolution, the cosmic integration.